Hello, can everyone hear me? Welcome to TechEd and thanks for joining us. This is DBI 333. Telstra uses Microsoft to inform T-Inform. Hi, my name is Christina Rumpf and I work for Microsoft. My job is to walk around and talk to all you people out there, and I get to see some awesome things as part of my job in what you've done with the technology. But before we get to talk about the awesome things, I'm going to tell you a story about change and failure. Why? It'll highlight how change should be viewed. Sometimes it's not easy, but it shouldn't have to be hard. So I was working for a company a fair while ago, and I had just witnessed one of my reporting users do a cut and paste in a spreadsheet and accidentally delete a whole table out of our corporate business critical database. Yes, it can be done. It's very easy to do. Shortly after that, I attended a SQL Server 2005 SSRS course. There, I saw this amazing thing. It was called a data model. It was amazing. It was going to completely change the world. You can create a true and correct picture of data, allow users to use it. They can do their own reporting. It was the most amazing thing ever. It was going to change the world. I was so excited. Monday morning, I got to work. It's going to change the world. It's going to implement it. Data warehouse is already in SQL Server, so that was no issue. It was pretty easy to do. I already created the data model first thing I did on Monday, and then I decided I was going to implement it. So I went around and talked to the business. First thing I did is said, okay, what reports are you currently using? They came back to me with three pages of unformatted SQL Server in a notepad file. It was so daunting, I pretty much almost gave up at that point. In the end, I did fail. I didn't get it working, I didn't get it corporately accepted, so why did I fail? What I should have done is I didn't engage the business enough. I didn't go to the business, show them what it was capable of before trying to get the other stuff in. If the business is behind you, get them excited. They'll back you and they'll help you get over all of these stumbling blocks. So the point of this is that change, implementing changes like this is not about technology. It's about the people. So change... But when you're doing changes, it can be like this. It can be really daunting and intimidating. You look at that and you think it is a lot of hard work. This is a picture of Mount Everest from the bottom. You look at that and you think it's going to take a lot of hard work. There's days and days and days of work involved. But it doesn't have to be daunting. You need to have a plan. If you have a plan, you have the gear, you've got a timetable, camping grounds, support personnel, you can overcome, you can climb Mount Everest. It's the same thing about change. You need to understand what all your barriers are and have a plan on how to overcome all those barriers. And when you're implementing, make sure that you're continuously engaging with the business. If you completely engage with the business, get them excited, get them behind you, get them following you every day, get them wanting to see what the next thing you're doing. Understand what their requirements are. There's no point in you implementing something and them saying, well, that's not really what I wanted. And finally, celebrate your victories, especially when you're overcoming your barriers. If you're not celebrating your victories, you just end up getting tied down with not wanting to go to the next point. So if you keep focused on your goal, eventually you'll make it. This is not me, by the way, in case anyone was thinking that. I haven't climbed Mount Everest, but it would be awesome to be up there, looking down at the view and seeing what you've accomplished. So why did I tell you this story? It's got nothing to do with Telstra. I told you this story because of the other two people up here on the stage with me today. They've been through a similar journey of implementing change. They've overcome a lot of barriers and they're still on that journey, but they're already getting great success. Here's a short video on what they have done.
Next video. Welcome to T-Inform, Telstra's new home of business intelligence. On T-Inform, you'll find reliable, up-to-date data that you can access through a suite of world-class business intelligence tools. Those tools include PowerView, Performance Point, Report Builder, and Excel Services. PowerView is a simple but powerful tool to help you explore and visualize your data. With PowerView, you can build your own reports so you can view your data the way that you need to. Performance Point dashboards provide a quick and easy way to get a high-level view of your data, while still allowing you to drill down into the detail when you need to. Report Builder is for more formal reporting. Through a simple drag-and-drop interface, you can create reports to share with your team in minutes. Finally, there's Excel Services, for those that prefer the familiar look and feel of Microsoft Excel. To access T-Inform, navigate to tinform.in.telstra.com.au. To help you become familiar with T-Inform, the team at the Business Intelligence Centre of Excellence have created Learn T-Inform. Here, you'll find a number of short instructional videos to help you use the tools on T-Inform. At around 1 minute each, they're a quick and easy way to develop the simple skills you'll need to start exploring your data. On the Learn T-Inform homepage, you'll find a link to a demo PowerView gallery. Here you can practice building your own reports using the same sample data that was used to create the instructional videos. You'll be building your own reports in no time. There's also a demo Performance Point dashboard that you can use to become familiar with this type of reporting. Learn T-Inform also provides a way to request access to T-Inform, request to have data added or reports built on T-Inform, and to let us know if you're having any problems with T-Inform. If you have any questions about T-Inform, there's a good chance they'll be answered on the Frequently Asked Questions page. The tiles on the T-Inform homepage are organized into categories. Each tile leads to a site or page within T-Inform. T-Inform also contains a search bar to help you find the specific piece of content that you're after. T-Inform is built around sites, the lowest of which is a team site. Team sites allow you to create reports, upload documents, and engage with your team through discussions. Once the data on a team site has been reviewed and approved, it can then be submitted to a BI site. BI sites only contain the most reliable, high-quality business data. If there's a particular report that you're interested in, you can subscribe to it and have it sent to your inbox every day, every week, or as frequently as you need. You can also set up a data alert, which will notify you if a specific number in a report reaches some specified threshold. For example, you could set up a data alert to be notified when a sales figure in your sales report falls below a certain value. T-Inform also contains wiki sites that allow you and your team to collaborate and share ideas. Thanks for watching. We hope that you'll enjoy using T-Inform.
So, please welcome to the stage John Simon and Paul Scaife. Paul's going to be talking about the architecture, and John's going to be doing some demos and asking and answering some questions, not asking.
Hi, good morning, everybody. So, of course, I'm the architect. All I get is the problems. People come every day with their problems to me, and what I'm going to talk about now is what are the problems that brought us to think about T-Inform? Well, first of all, it's Telstra, right? This is not a new organization. It's not a small organization. It's not an organization that doesn't have very many systems or only a small amount of data. We have got a lot of everything. That's a lot of technology, a lot of data, a lot of people, a lot of process, a lot of problems. But really, none of those problems are problems that we can't solve when we start thinking about it. Here's one of the problems. As I say, Telstra's been around a long time. BI tools have been around for a long time. Telstra has got a lot of business objects, a lot of Cognos. It's got SaaS around. It's got MicroStrategy. It's got Oracle. It's got a lot of Microsoft around. Now, it's not that I can go in one day and start talking to our users and say, hey, you know all those reports that you're using today? How about if I get rid of all of those and tomorrow or next week or next month or in 6 months' time, I'm going to give you exactly the same report, but I'm going to give you it in a different tool. Oh, you'll like this other tool. It's lovely. And I'm going to charge you $1 or maybe $1,000 or maybe $1 million. Well, either way, you'd look back at me and think, well, hold on. What am I getting new? Right? This is stuff that I already have. Why should I change things? Okay, and this is something that we've got to deal with constantly within Telstra. There is a lot of legacy and heritage estate within there. It's not that easy to just say, okay, we're going to get rid of all of that. We're going to start again. We're going to do something new. So often when we look at things, we have to incorporate what have we already got. There's massive investments in things that we've already got, and how can we leverage that? It also creates kind of other issues for us having lots of technology around as well. Because what we get is we have different business units are using different bits of technologies. And that's often for lots of different historical reasons. And what happens then is people go in and they'll perhaps use one of those BI tools and they'll extract some data and they'll put it out into Excel. And then they'll create some Excel reports and they'll maybe grab some data from one of the other BI tools and bring that out and put it into Excel. And then maybe they may create some PowerPoint reports, certain PowerPoint packs, and those PowerPoint packs will go to execs and that's their week's work. And then they'll start again the next week. Okay, this is taking an inordinate amount of time and money. We're doing the same things over and over again. And that's just not one person in one business unit in one city in Telstra. All right, we've got to remember this is, you know, a global organization. Now, we're not just Telstra in Australia. We've got Telstra around the world. But around Australia, we're doing similar things. And all we're doing is really watching those days and that money go by. What we've got to think is, okay, well, how can we do better? How can we deliver more? How can we cut down those times to market? How can we stop people wasting their time doing unproductive work and start bringing in productive work? So, okay, yeah, let's start thinking about that. And there we go. That's my life. Everybody brings me problems. I've got to start thinking about some solutions. All right, whilst taking into account in that, well, I've got thousands of business objects licenses out there, thousands of Cognos ones, hundreds of Microsoft and SaaS, Oracles out there. There's other stuff. There is all sorts, really. One of the things we do have, though, is we're licensed up for Microsoft, for everybody within Telstra. Okay, and that gets the cogs working up here. Now, they only go slowly some days, but it gets working, and we start thinking, okay, well, what can we do about this? How can things get better? Okay, so let's think about that. And let's look across the BI estate within Telstra. Welcome to my world, anybody? Okay, this is only a snapshot of a few of the systems that I have to work with. And it's a representation. It's not actually 100% real. It's much worse than this. When I start thinking about numbers, and whenever anybody ever does presentations, they tell you the worst thing you can do is read off a slide. But the next slide I've got, you know, it just means that, you know, sometimes I've got to read off some numbers. We've got 7 major data warehouses within Telstra, all right? And here I'm just talking about major data warehouses. When we're talking major data warehouses, that's multiple terabytes in there. There are 50-odd large reporting systems, 100 minor ones. The last audit I was involved in, there were over 200 different reporting systems that we identified. There are lots and lots of areas of data within Telstra. Telstra generates inordinate amounts of data. When you think about Google, they generate a lot of data. Well, just think about the fact that all those Google requests are going across Telstra networks. Right? Each one of those is each Google request is creating multiple activities on our network. Right? Lots and lots of information that Telstra has. How in the world can we use all of that? And let's look at some more numbers. This is, again, just one of our data warehouses. 75 terabytes of business data in our enterprise data warehouse. Right? We put 3 terabytes of new data in per month. We'd like to put more in. Lots of views, lots of jobs, millions of things are happening constantly. Right? Our BI Center of Excellence, of which John's a part, they look after more than 250 terabytes of data warehouse. Right? There's a lot of data that we're looking after. Okay, there's my life. So, eventually we want some solutions, not just people bringing me problems. So, solutions, man. How do we think about solutions? Well, the first kind of things we think about for solutions is where do we want to get to? What kind of things do we want our users to think about our data? What do we want the users to be able to do? Well, we want to have a single powerful place for them to go and do their reporting, right? One place to go. Reporting, just as ubiquitous as email. Everybody knows you want to go to email, you go to Outlook. Reporting, you go to X. All right, in Telstra, we want to have reporting, go to T-Inform. That's the place for your reporting. We want to be able to collaborate. All right, reporting isn't just about isolation. Here's my report, here's my numbers. It's a large organization, as Telstra. If one person needs those numbers, it's odds on that there's another 10 people in the company that can use those numbers and create real value from them. We want to be able to visualize that data. It's not just anymore about having reports in a standard Excel table. It's about bringing that data, making it jump off the page at people so they don't have to spend time and hours going through data. It's going to jump out straight at you from all the cool visualizations that we put out there. And strong self-service, all right? It's always about doing more with less. All right, we haven't got infinite numbers of IT people out there. There's not infinite numbers of budgets to go off and keep writing reports for people. Okay? In any organization, let alone in Telstra. What there is, though, is a lot of data and a lot of appetite for data. So it's about being able to put that data out there, give it to the users, and say to the users, okay, here's the information. Go and get this information. Would you like it slightly differently? That's fine. Go and change it. Go for your life. So if we can get to that, that would be all great. That's the solution for you. Brilliant. I'll go home now. No. So there's more than that. Okay, that's where I want to get to. How am I going to get there? How can we deal with that information? So first of all, I look right across the whole BI architecture and say, all right, what are we going to do? How can we help people? What's changing here? Well, there's big changes in how we look at our data. Where do we get our data from? Now, traditionally, it used to be straight RDBMSs. We'll just get our data from our structured internal source systems. Nowadays, we look at unstructured data. We're using the cloud more and more. We need to get that cloud data. Use that. Telstra powers the cloud as well. And in powering the cloud, we've got all our network data as well. We need to get that network data so we can keep optimizing our network and keep providing those great mobile and fixed networks for everybody. So what we want to do is we'll take all of that data, we'll put it all in one place in Telstra so that we can have it in one place so people can say, oh yeah, we know where it is now. We'll go and use that. And from there, from that one place, we can send it out. Perhaps into our analytical workspaces where we can really do the advanced analytics and data science on that data. Create models to optimize things in real time and feed it back to those real-time systems, whether that be fraud prevention or network optimization. Perhaps now online interactions. More and more business is coming through online. That data feeds back through to our customers and creates a big feedback loop. Our customers interact more with us, those more interactions. We keep bringing that data into Telstra, feed it through our models, learn more and more through our analytics, and get better and better for our customers. Customers are happy, business does better, everybody's happy. That's one of the ways that we use our data. Another way of using our data, we put our data into our data warehouses. I mentioned how many data warehouses Telstra's got earlier. We can break those out. I mean, we've got big data warehouses where we look after our call and network information. We've got corporate data warehouses, which are really, you know, how we lock in the data and look after our business. We've got legacy and heritage. Telstra's been around for a long time. There are different parts of our business that will keep running for a long time but aren't part of our growth business. That still has to keep going, and we have self-service data warehouses out there encouraging our users to use that data as any way they can to get value out of information to serve the customers. All of that data from all those places we want to get to one place so that users, when they're coming in, they can go to T-Inform, access it from multiple devices anywhere, and even surface data from our application reporting platforms. Now, across all of this, there are certain pervasive functions which you just have to do everywhere. We have to make sure that we're looking after privacy, separation, and security of our data. Telstra's got wholesale and retail and various obligations around NBN and things like that. We need to know about our metadata. What kind of data have we got here? How current is this data? We look at the data quality of that data so that we know when our business is making decisions on the data, that they know the quality of their decisions are based on the quality of the data, and they can make risk-based decisions on that. That's how things fit across the whole BI architecture, but now really it's T-Inform that you came here really to listen to about today. So I'm going to delve into T-Inform a little bit. And earlier I was in an interesting presentation earlier in the week that used SQL Server to look into who was drinking the most beer in the world. And really, so SQL Server, it must be all about drinkers, because when I look at SQL Server, I think about whiskey. And SQL Server, to me, it's really like a whiskey. Now, up here, we've got Johnny Walker Red. I don't know if anybody knows much about whiskey out here. Any whiskey drinkers in the audience? Quick show of hands. There we go. Great. So you'll all know that there are 32 different whiskeys in Johnny Walker. 32 different malt whiskies. Now, malt whiskies are the best of the best. All those 32 different malt whiskies, now, fair enough, if they were on their own and being sold individually, and lots of them are, I don't know if anybody out there, have you heard of Talisker, Oban, what else is not coming to mind, Dalwhinnie, lots of different malts. Now, they're out there, and they do okay on their own, but they're not market leaders in the same way that Johnny Walker is. And that's really a lot when I think about SQL Server. It's got all those little bits within it, and you put them all together, and it creates a market leader for us. And that market leader is how we set up T-Inform. We use SQL Server 2012, and especially really SSAS, to create that semantic layer, using either the tabular or multidimensional models to give us that common business view. We can tell our users, okay, here are your cubes, here are your tabular models. Off you go, create your reports from it. Whether that's sales, network, any of the kind of information that we'll look at. Then we surface that information up through SharePoint so users can collaborate on data and report on that data. We use all the Microsoft tool sets to report on the data, whether that's SSRS for our straight reports, our dashboarding and scorecarding through Performance Point. We've got Power View up there and Power Pivot as well. We use all of the Microsoft BI tools. But it's not just about new tools, because I mentioned earlier, I can't get rid of all of that legacy and heritage estate, those thousands of other tools that we've got out there. Those thousands of other reports, we can still surface those through SharePoint as well and use the web parts to let everybody go to one place to see all the information in one place and find that data All right? And that's really what makes things easy for the users. It's all about making things easy for users, getting the users to self-service themselves, and taking the load away from IT, saying, okay, there you go. And that's a real theme of things, is getting users to work with their data. It's not easy, and it takes a lot of backup, but we put the backup together. And John's going to take you through some of the things we actually do and demonstrate them as we go through. So that's really how we set up TeamForm. One of the other things I just mentioned, the big benefits we get from putting those common semantic layers in there with SSAS, we can connect to any of our other legacy and heritage data warehouses that are out there, whether that's Teradata, Oracle, SQL Server, and all sorts of other stuff that we've got. So, pictures are great, architects, we draw boxes, but now really we need to implement things. And it's about the kind of things that we did to implement that really give us those extra little bits within TeamForm. Now, the first thing we did was look at the hardware. We split it up really into four VMs. We used two servers, one for for the high availability and backup. This is how it's set up. The big things that we did, we used two HP DL580s. Why did we use HP DL580s? Because that's the SOE within Telstra. All right, it wasn't a big thing. We just needed the servers there. What we did, though, is we didn't just take our standard Ford Falcon servers. Is we got the FPV ones. We put an extra terabyte of RAM into the servers, and it was that extra terabyte of RAM that gives us the extra zoom within TeamForm. We use it within our our cube servers for our tabular models to give us all that in-memory power. It gives the users that speed of thought reporting that they love. And it really didn't cost that much to add that extra memory in. The other thing we had to do was look at security. Okay? The big thing often when we're looking at security is people look at security and say, okay, how do we stop people getting to things? Now, that's really hard with BI, is thinking that way around, because the whole point of BI is you want people to go and get at data and use that data. So really, we have to start thinking, okay, how do we allow the right people to get at the right data and start thinking that way around? And it's a big change. But when we do start thinking that way, we also think of something else and think, okay, well, this data doesn't belong to IT. We just look after this data for the business. It's the business's data. So they should be the ones deciding who's allowed to see the data. So what we did is we set things up so that within TeamForm, we had different levels of how we access our data. We can grant users access to our BI sites, where they can see the reports there. And then there's the data below that, and then we grant users access to the data below. And in terms of granting that user access, we use email lists to do that. Now, some people say, okay, well, why aren't you using LDAP lists? Well, sorry, LDAP groups. It was just too hard in Telstra. It took a long time to get things set up. It's a large organization, different processes. So we work out what's the easiest thing we can do to get our users to do this. And it was literally working things through our email lists. We can set up email lists, make a business user the owner of that email list. They can grant people access to the email list, and then the email list has access to the data. That gives the right people access to the right data and puts access in the hands of the user. It also puts responsibility in the hands of the user as well, which I'll go on to talk about in a minute, because governance is a big thing there. Now, when we talk about governance and security, those kind of things, it's really these two guys that I think about. Now, can anybody tell me who these two people are up on the slide? Anyone? Somebody must know. Spider-Man, thank you. Okay, we have Spider-Man is up here. Okay, and of course you all know the guy over here on the left. Of course you do. It's Voltaire. Now I've told you it's Voltaire, it all clicks into place, And you know, of course, Spider-Man and Voltaire. That's because Stan Lee, in his very first Spider-Man comic, stole a very famous line from Voltaire, who, of course, you all know is a famous 17th century philosopher. He was the first guy to publish, "With great power comes great responsibility." And that's really what the governance is about. Putting governance back in the hands of the users gives users great power. But there's a lot of responsibility there. The users can't come along anymore and say, "Hey, IT, that person's looking at the data and he shouldn't be." Well, hold on. You're the user. You're responsible for that data. You gave him access to that data. Okay? So it's about bringing it back to the users, bringing things back towards a self-serve culture. Now, I flew up here this week, and it's great. Self-service machines at the airport, I didn't have to go and check in anywhere. I can just go there, show my frequent flyer card, select my own seat on the plane, off we go. I love the whole self-service thing. But some of the users, they don't. People want to go up at the checkouts and talk to somebody and hand over their bags, answer those questions. So we also think about, okay, well, we need to give them options. We need to help. Also, when you check in at these, there is one of the airline people is there to help. We can't just leave the users on their own and say, "There you go, off you go. You know, all yours. Now it's your self-service, your responsibility. You've got that power." We have to help them along. So there's lots of ways that we help them along. The learning sites that we have are one of the ways, and also some of the ways we handle the governance. What we do is we're using kite marks, medals. So we have different medals to say, well, we've got gold quality, we've got silver quality, we've got our bronze quality, so that when users to go to look at that information, they know what they're looking at. They want to be able to look straight at reports and go, yep, gold, all good, can trust this stuff. But on another case, you know, we might have had some users come along and they just wanted to get a general idea of some report. So they grabbed a bit of data, weren't sure if it was exactly it, put it together, got a general idea, and then that was enough for the type of purpose that they wanted it for. And they might keep it there, but, you know, really, it's perhaps only bronze, even if it's that. And that's what the users need to know. They need to know when they're looking at information, you know, how much can I trust that, and to see that instantly, so that you can really work with it. Now, that's kind of how we set things up. It's great for me to tell you about it and all that, but I think what you really want to do is to see it. And that's what we've come here today, to show you it so that you can see it. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to hand over to John Simon. He's the lead developer and brains behind the implementation of TInform. And he's going to show you a live demo. Everybody's praying it'll all go great. So thanks very much, John.
I don't need that. So this is TInform production. What I'm going to do is show you some of the capabilities that we've got and talk a bit more about how we've organized things, and some of the lessons that we've learned along the way. Now, I was hoping to show you some interesting insights that can be gained from using this tool, but the lawyers put the kibosh on that. So I have to show you something that's a little bit less exciting, which is usage of our EDW. Not great, but it'll give you the general idea of what we can achieve. Essentially, what we've done is create communities. So the idea is that we have different communities for like-minded subjects, and within those we have BI sites and team sites, as you heard on the video. We also have the ability for users to have their own community pages. So, for example, if I click on this, users can come in here and create their own tiles with icons. And those could be linked to wikis or BI sites, team sites, or straight to a report, or even to an external URL. So if I click on the BI COE page, if I go to EDW usage. So for each BI site, We have four main functional areas. We have dashboards, Power View for analysis. We have reports for your standard SSRS reporting, and documents. Now, I wasn't sure whether or not it was worth me going through and showing a demo on this, but I have been asked a couple of questions, so I think it's probably worth explaining what Performance Point is and just give a quick demo of that for some people who haven't seen it. Now, I have been asked, why do we still use Performance Point when we could use Power View? And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that I don't have an on-premise mobile Power View viewer, which is unfortunate. And this does work on people's iPads. People can interact with this on an iPad. And it's great for managers. So managers can come in here and interact with this, look at the data at a glance and say, oh, something might be wrong. I want to explore it a little bit. And then they can get somebody else to do the work. And then that work would probably be then in Power View. So within Performance Point, I have the ability to change measures, change my dimension members if I want to look at my analysis services. So here all we're seeing is over a 90-day period, let's look at EDW usage by different areas. So how much is it being used in terms of what's the number of rows returned and how much CPU is being used? It's a bit boring, but that's all I had, other than AdventureWorks. Interestingly, so we have about 13 billion rows a day being extracted by our users. So a lot of our users will pull out that data and then put it into their own tools, often Access or Excel. And from that, they will do their own BI. And so what we're trying to do is give them a better way of doing that. So here, obviously, I can interact with my data. I can, and if you saw Peter Myers the other day, he was showing some of this functionality. I can open this up in a new window or export it out to PowerPoint or Excel. And I can zoom in and interact with my data. I have the ability to drill down and drill in. I can change my measures. So rather than looking at the number of result rows, I might want to look at the average CPU time. And a very nice piece of functionality is the decomposition tree. I don't really have a lot we can show here, but what it'll do is it will follow the hierarchy, and I can say, okay, if I'm looking at web logs, which groups are looking at the web logs? And it's, what is it, unavailable? Yep, unknown, great. But what it does is it gives you a nice view of the distribution of your data. And I will show one other thing. So we also have the ability for scorecarding. So you saw that in the demo, and I was asked this question yesterday. So, and this leads into the collaboration component, which I'm going to explain as well. So there's two ways we can have collaboration. We can have, well, a number of ways. We have discussion lists. We have the ability to have a discussion list associated with a piece of data. So in the past, what would happen is people would use another reporting system to pull the data out, put it into Excel, make the graphs look pretty, throw it into PowerPoint, add some inane commentary, and then give that to their managers. But that commentary was then lost for everyone else. There's no history of it. And we provide a way to have that history. Within Performance Point itself, I can look at my data, so then I can see if I'm using scorecards, I can understand if something's increasing is better or worse, and I can add comments. So it might be that I could be a manager who might want to leave a message for my underlings. And I can post that. And then they might see that and go, oh, hang on, I better find out what he means. I can also, as I said here, we've got the discussion list. So the discussion list is associated with the data. So people can see over time what commentary was associated with, you know, if I have a dip in sales, why was that? And people can provide subject matter expertise. The next thing is Power View. So for some of you who have seen Amir Net's Power BI video and you've seen the demos, we saw that and we thought, that looks fantastic. Let's do that. So my very skilled SharePoint developer, Adam, built this out for us. So we use both tabular and multidimensional. But if you use a multidimensional solution or a perspective on a tabular solution, you need to use an RSDS file, a report data source, rather than a BISM. So what would happen if we saw this in a list view is that the user is going to see different icons, and it makes it a little bit confusing. So here we've got the one icon, and I can either double-click to create a new report, a PowerView report, or I can launch Excel directly from here. And with the RSDS file, we've embedded in the ODC the server name and the cube name so that users, whether they're using a previous version of Excel, when we had some strange issues cropping up, when we did that, everything works fine. We also have folders that I can drill into, so I can go in here and see my data. And one thing that we just added in last week was if somebody's using a Power Pivot model, let's show those so that people understand that this is actually different from these other reports. So this is actually Power Pivot, but I can create a Power View report off the top of that. Everyone here, I'm assuming, has seen Power View. One thing that's been interesting, and I was hoping to demonstrate it, but I can't really do it with this data. Normally, I'm sure a lot of you have seen... Has anyone here not seen PowerView? Everyone's seen it, right? So, but one of the things when you use your time series animation, it's quite interesting when you look at, if you're looking at customer data, rather than looking using time as the play axis, if you use the age of the person, so then you can see things like, well, 21-year-olds have more downloads or more usage on average or whatever it is, but 41-year-olds seem to use it more. So there's a higher distinct count along the x-axis, whereas the y-axis could be usage, for example. And it's kind of interesting because it's not what you would think, but it seems like the Gen Xers are actually using these things more, but it's the younger people who've with the higher downloads or higher usage in terms of distinct count versus the actual usage. Reports everyone knows about, so I haven't even bothered for the demo. But one of the things that we are doing is we use, even though by default we're using Tabular for our cubes, and I'll go through that shortly, why, we still use MDX because it's a richer language for querying than DAX because you have a lot of the hierarchical functions. A lot of people already have experience with that, so we can turn around the reports a lot faster. And it generally works fine. You still also have the drag and drop. So for people in the business who want to create a report with Report Builder, they can drag and drop, create their report, and they're off. We have had situations where a Report Builder report, or Excel, in fact, was taking 45 minutes to return data because it was using MDX. I'm very fortunate that I have Darren Gosbell working for me. So he's probably the best BI guy in Australia. And I've heard other BI guys reckon he's the best in the world. He rewrote it just using DAX, and the query took 2 seconds instead of 45 minutes. So the DAX queries in some instances will run a lot faster. DAX has a better query engine, produces better query plans, but MDX has better caching. A lot of the times they don't care about the caching with the DAX anyway. In terms of, and the last thing is, so documents. So with documents, this is where users can come in, put their, if they export a document out into Power Pivot, PowerPoint, there's too many powers. They can interact with it, they can load it here, or they can use Excel services. So you would have seen this. It's all very nice with my timelines, etc. And the one nice thing about this is, if you missed Peter Meyer's session, when you save your PowerView document, you can go to Browser Options and say select items in the workbook. And then what that will do is give you a very nice way to see this information here with your slices down the side. So here's my timeline. And I can change my report and select which groups of users I'm looking at. And I can then go here, turn this off. I've done something strange. Oh. And of course, I can interact with my data. And this works really well when we've had users doing this via iPads. So while it's not quite PowerView for mobile, it actually does work very well. So it reports and dashboards do work quite well. Again, I've just added the community component in here, so this is where we have our discussion list. And we have the usual social features, so you can assign badges and create categories and your reputation settings. Any questions about any of that before I move on? No? Okay. One of the solutions I was hoping to show, I'll talk about scale of what we've done so far. So we have one solution with 1.4 billion rows. We have another solution with about, it's probably a billion now as well. In terms of compression, so the 1.4 billion rows are compressed to 15 gig. Some solutions, obviously, the more distinct the values, the less compression you'll get. Where we've had to do, being Telstra, we have big dimensions. So our account dimension, and that's a type 1, not type 2, that's 26 million rows. For customer with a type 2, just for over a 2-year period, it's 44 million rows. So when you're sucking that in every day, it can take a little while. We don't really have any issues around that, but it does mean that you're having less distinct values there. So what we've also done is provide ways, in fact, I'll go through this, some ways for the business to understand their data. In fact, what I'll do is I'm going to switch back to the other slides so I don't lose my place. So we're often asked, what does this term mean? We have a different tool that we're using currently, which I think is rubbish. So I want to replace that with more of a, where we have people in the business who are supposed to be the subject matter experts and provide definitions of terms. I'm looking to switch that to a SharePoint option and provide more of a crowdsourcing functionality so people can put their own definitions in if they don't see one. And if those subject matter experts think it's wrong, then they can come in and override it. So what's in this cube? So we've built some metadata around what's in a cube, and I'll show you what that looks like. So users can then go in, see what's in a cube, what are the measures, what are the business terms and the calculations. And we are, in fact, building a more visual representation of that. How fresh is my data? So obviously data currency is a big thing. People want to know, well, has this cube processed today or not? And what's the quality of the data? So we have a data quality firewall where we're using a third-party product for doing data profiling, but all of those results are then presented via T-Inform for our users to understand if there are any issues, in fact. And they also have a watch list, so if there's a data quality issue, they can receive an alert. So if we look at the cube metadata view we built, this is an SSRS report, and it uses a combination of data management views and some AMO code. So here, for example, if I look at user experience, I can see all of my measures and what the definitions are, the calculations. And to be honest, this is really great when you're a developer because you know you've done something somewhere else and you don't have to go into TFS and open it up. You can just go straight here and reuse a calc. I can see all my tables and the terms. And if I click on a table for billing accounts, I can then go in and see my query that I wrote in Teradata to pull that. And also, I have the ability to see which users have access to this. So if I click on T-Inform support, I can get our internal accounts as to who's on that user group list. And then again, I can come over here and select which other cubes I want to see. So we're expanding that, like I said. If you're interested, it's a lot of hard work, and it's been killing my SharePoint developer. But there's a product out there called Zentity, and in fact, I'd recommend you go and look at Microsoft Research, Bing, Microsoft Research, and Visual Explorer. And it's a very nice tool that those guys have come up with to look at the relationships between objects. But you'll need a good .NET coder to actually make it work. The other thing we have is a data freshness report. What this is doing at the moment is this goes off against every model and says, give me the max date against on each date column where that table has a measure. So then I know all of these things that are green, they're good. Anything that's 2 days old, or that, you know, maybe we have day plus one, and anything that's red is obviously an issue and needs to be resolved. But these ones are actually things that I've got to turn off. But if, for example, bundles, I can see that this one is running late, but these two tables have processed, and this one hasn't. I don't know what that means. That's what it was. So we also we log everything, but we also have some nice visualizations so we can look at how our cubes are processing, what the duration is, and if we can see if there's any spikes or if there's a problem with potentially our queries. This is really important, onboarding and familiarization and education. So the Harvard Business Review recently released an article stating that CIOs need to pay attention to this. It's no longer enough for people to just roll out a tool. So we spent a lot of effort creating instructional videos for our users to come in here. We've created the frequently asked questions. We have discussion lists. The idea is that we want to, and we've created this other site, LearnTInform, that you saw. And also we're making sure that every project delivered will have some sort of familiarization training. Because otherwise, people they would just stick with what they know. So we have to convince people that this is what they should be doing. Because even if their managers say, do this, they won't do it unless they feel comfortable. So we are training people on what T-Inform is, how they can navigate, give them some training in PowerView, how do you create your own report. It's just a 45-minute session. We're rolling that out to about 900 users over the next 6 weeks. And Performance Point, obviously. Not everyone will get access to create reports. So most people shouldn't need to create a new SSRS report. But it's a very hard habit to break. So even when we have been having testing, people are creating SSRS reports rather than looking at things in Excel. One of the ways that we've been able to get sponsorship with T-Inform was that at the very high levels where we're saying, well, if you use T-Inform, rather than collecting your data from all these different places and people literally copying and pasting every day for different business units and posting things up, go to the one place where it's all automated. There was some work done, and there's something like 10,000 Cognos reports that have been created, of which 46 are actually used. And the rest of about 3,000 reports that people use are in fact Excel. So what we're trying to say is you don't need to be doing that. You can come here. Everything's in the one place. Use PowerView. And then we've created some core reports so that these are the reports that go to the CFO. And certain people are allowed to associate some commentary with that. But the idea is that most people should just be learning PowerView. So learn to inform. So you saw that we had the discussion list, we have videos, frequently asked questions. What we've done is create a lot of one-minute videos. Here's how you do this. Drag and drop, and that's been quite well received. So, self-service versus BI COE content. We've created functionality for users to run their own ETL. So sometimes a user may have, there's still manual processes that will occur in the business. They receive files from external partners, and they need to do something to that file and then drop it into a directory. And we've created a SSIS package that will build something properly, put it into a data mart. But those users have the ability to drop the files in. And in fact, if I go to my menu, we can see all the SQL agents. And you can if we switch across. So here, for example, is a job where this data comes from an external location from called Detail Records. Business person come in here, they do what they need to do on their end, and then they just click start. And then they'll be told if the job succeeds or fails, and why it failed if it did. You know, there might be duplicates. So this has been great, and it's been great for us from a support perspective. So I run Express Delivery. I have the small team, around 20-odd developers. We have a strategic delivery team with around 60, but we also have a large live service support team. And they don't want to be receiving requests every day, raise an ITAM just to run an ETL job. So now we've actually given those users the ability to do this themselves. One of the other things that we have is we want to make sure we keep our analytics teams on side. So we have analytics teams who are using products like ClickView, for example, because they couldn't get what they needed in the past. Now, one of the problems we have is, like I said, we have 13 billion rows a day being pulled out of just our EDW, let alone all our other systems. So the BICOE, about 265 terabytes of business data. We have a number of those data warehouses and about 40 reporting systems in total. So we don't want data coming out of our ecosystem. We want to keep it within the ecosystem. We want to bring those users in and these analytics teams. So what we're saying to them is, well, and one of the issues that they face when they use a product like ClickView is, sure, you can do some really cool stuff, but then how do you get that out to anyone? We have invested and used, because we're using Microsoft, we can roll this out to the entire organization, all 50-odd thousand people. So what we're doing is saying you can have team sites, we can have third-party BI sites, so we brand them differently. So if you're coming in, if you've got content up there that's not supported by us, we make it very clear it's not supported by us, and if you have an issue with that data quality, you go to another group to get that sorted out. And we can provide those community pages like you saw. So it's like the community page on the front screen. They can provide their own icons and do all of that. And with the team sites, so the idea is that they can build models in Power Pivot, but maybe they do it for 1 or 2 months worth of data. They get their model refined themselves. They work out what it is that they want, what they're trying to achieve. When they've done that, they can then hand it to us. And because it's virtually the same engine as Analysis Services Tabular, we can do right-click upgrade to Analysis Services, and then we can put in things like logging, partitioning, scheduling, and security.
I'll come to that in a moment. So the idea then is that once they also, these groups can build, any group can have a team site, but we've limited the space, the capacity, because we don't want people using this rather than the enterprise document management system, because this is SharePoint 2013, it's much better than SharePoint 2007. But what they can do is, create their Power Pivot models, and then if they want, they can upload those to a BI site. But again, those documents are only visible to the person who created the document and to the site owner. So here I might have a team site, and I've created my Power Pivot model, and I say, hey, this is something that's really cool. I want to upload that. So we can clearly see when I come into Power View that if it's green, if it's Power Pivot, but it has to be approved, because what we don't want to be is in the situation where somebody says, well, how come these numbers are different from these other numbers? So if it comes from a cube, you can trust the numbers. If it comes from a Power Pivot document, we have no control over that. Don't know if you can necessarily trust the numbers, but the site owner of the BI site has to make sure that those numbers are okay, or it's come from an approved source. because if our numbers are wrong, then people are going to blame us. They don't blame whoever created it. I'll switch back. So governance. Wikis and discussion lists. Basically, people can put whatever they want in those, but they're great for collaboration. We have the team sites, where we build our Power Pivot and Power View. So people, those analytics teams, can do what they need to do to understand their data and create those business rules. And then we have the BI sites, which are very tightly governed, have our analysis services cubes. I say cubes, but I mean tabular models and multidimensional. I just can't be bothered saying both. And again, as you can see, controlled Power Pivot. And then lastly, that's T-Inform. So less controls up to tighter controls. We want to make sure that the data is very secure and people can trust our data because we spend a lot of money testing. Lessons learned. So we use analysis services by default, tabular by default. Multidimensional is great, but for those of you who saw Greg Lowe's presentation. Basically, I agree with what Greg was saying. Tabular, it's faster to build. We've got great performance, great compression. It should be running faster than multidimensional if you're using PowerView. As part of SQL Server 2012 Cumulative Update 4, you had the ability to have multidimensional cubes with PowerView, which was fantastic. The other thing that came about with that is that you could have disconnected tables. So say, for example, you have a table where you might have relative date. So you may have a table that says, this is my current period, my week to date, month to date, year to date, quarter to date. You could do that in Power Pivot, and it worked really well, but it wouldn't work in PowerView because there was no connection between the tables. Well, now that's no longer an issue. Another great example of that working is where if I'm building a periodic snapshot, let's say I was looking at mobile products. I want to know how many products are in operation. Now, over a certain period of time, you know, I get 70 million records a day. The 70 million mobile products in operation a day. So that means plans, mobile repayment options, contracts, message bank, all those kinds of things. I don't want to store 70 million rows every day, right? That's the standard Kimball methodology, and it works great. But for these volumes, that's a lot of data. If I want to store that, let's say 70 million rows a day for 2 years, we're talking billions and billions of records. With disconnected tables, I can create a DAX formula and say, give me the last date where this date is between the start and end date, and it works really, really well. Dimensional modeling is still super important. So it's like a database. You know, you can build your... you can write any old rubbish in a database, and it works fine if you've got 10 records. But when you have hundreds of millions or billions of records like we have to deal with daily, you're going to run into problems. So... Boyan Penev, who worked for me for a while as an MVP, he has an interesting blog post where he uses a tabular model on a fully denormalized one big fat table versus Star Schema versus Snowflake. Star Schema won. So it's really important to continue to use dimensional modeling. If people tell you you don't need to worry about that because it's in memory, then they're not using big enough volumes. This is an interesting one. So Darren Gosbell pointed this out to me where you may have... The great thing with Tabular is that I can have data from multiple sources. So I may have some data from Teradata, but I want to bring in something from another solution, like a channel dimension. I can create a calculated column in my fact table that does a lookup. And then I can then join to that. You have to use something like a minx and say, filter this table where it's the same key and the dates between the start date and end date. And then you can join to that. So you'll have that slight impact in processing time. But what it means is that you can join those different sources and have slowly changing dimensions. One other thing that I forgot to mention, I'll raise now. What we've done for Power Pivot users as well is create them a set of standard conformed dimensions. So we don't want people to coming up with their own definitions of conformed DIMMs. And if you're trying to connect via Teradata, it can be a pain. And we don't also certainly don't want our users to spend one day trying to get their load their Teradata drivers in the right order. So we've created a SQL Server database with no password, username PowerPivot user, and people can go in there, connect to it, and they, all they get is a list of views with our conformed DIMM. So everyone's using the same thing. And then it makes it easy for us if we're going to upgrade. SSIS poll processing. So we have just, we had a previous version, we've just implemented a new version where we have many jobs that finish because we're connecting to Oracle, to Teradata, to multiple different reporting solutions to build these tabular models. We want to be able to process just the current day or the day minus one. Or it could be the current month, or month minus one, month minus two. We pull in, I calculated the other day, about 230 million rows a day because we're only grabbing the current month. So what we've done is create a job that polls these different PCS jobs. So Control-M runs our jobs on Teradata. We then poll the PCS jobs, and then we put those into a queue so we can say, I'm going to run five of these if it comes from Teradata, from EDW. If it's against the TDW, I'm only going to run three of these because I don't have the resources. And against our system, we may not run another five. But it gives us a way to control that. And then we can process our cubes or tabular models. And we have a SharePoint front end. So users can say, I want to do a full refresh or only day minus month minus one or two. And what jobs to look for. Is there any questions? SQL Server 2012 with cumulative update. Have we installed cumulative update 5? 4. We're putting on 5 next week. Enterprise. Yes. Anyone else? So we are actually, Telstra is rolling out a new, so the question was how do we enable users to access T-Inform from remote devices? Currently we're using RNA tokens, but we're bringing in a new product. So it was Juniper and now it's something else. But it basically sends you a text message and say, here's your 4 digits, plug it in. So we are rolling that out for some sales managers. So they can look at it via their iPads.
The last slide, you mentioned something about queuing the messages or parallelizing the load and the
We're going
at. Which product are you using to manage the queuing and the threading, non-threading, and parallelism of these processes?
So the question was, which product are we using for the queuing? And I have to admit, I don't know. One of my guys did it. But I think it's all hand-coded with SQL, probably some .NET. Yeah, so it's all Microsoft, absolutely, yes. Any other questions?
Just a quick one. With the self-service ETL, have you got, forgive my ignorance, is that something that SharePoint can automatically connect to SQL Server Agent? Is that a thing, or have you coded that yourself?
So the question was around the self-service ETL. So essentially, it's us building the ETL packages. So yeah, so we build the SSIS packages, and we've just provided them a way to start those. So then, and then that job will process the package in the cube and update any reports, and we don't have to get involved unless there's an issue. Because I don't really want to be doing support. Any other questions? Yes?
From a governance perspective, I think, based on my understanding, you're giving the business the opportunity to pull the information from two cubes, pre-built cubes.
Yes. Yes.
So I can create my own report, which could be difficult to another business user or another domain, and each is pulling millions of records. And definitely this will have an impact on your corporate network. What's the governance vision of that?
So one of the things that we are, the question was around what if we have people building things that are the same, how do we stop that from chewing up our network? So one of the things that we're doing is, as I said, we're building this visual explorer. So people can go into TeenForum and say, okay, I want to look at this subject area. What are the cubes that are associated with that? Okay, on that cube, that looks something that might be of interest to me. What other sites come off that? What are the reports that come off that? So if you use search in SharePoint, you can only see what you have access to. So what we're going to do is provide this tool so everyone can see the metadata. So then I can know, oh, there is a report around this subject area. I can then click on that, and what it will do is it will come up and say, so this is one thing I'd like to show you. With the security, when I go to when a person comes to the front page, what they will see is people get access. They have to fill out a request form to get access to TeenForum. And the only thing they get access to then is, well, everyone can access our Learn TeenForum, but all they will see after that is access to the front page and NPS, one of the subject areas. But if somebody clicks on, I have access to everything, so I can't show you. But if I clicked on this, what it would do is it would say, why do you need access to this? So what will happen then is those other people can then say, well, yeah, sure, you might want to have access to this, but I need a good reason why I should give it to you. But the idea is then that other people can see what other people are doing if it's of interest to them and then apply to those people for access. So that way we hope to reduce the duplication. We're never going to, right? Because people will come up with, say, I like that, but I want one extra column. And what used to happen in the past, though, was they'd come and they'd spend 20 grand or 5 grand or whatever it is to build another Cognos report, but this one's got one more column on it. And that's how some people make their living right now within Telstra. So the idea is, no. We want to... The way we sell this to the business owners is your people will get to buy back their business days. You're buying back your business days by investing with us, your analysis days, because your staff will then no longer be doing analysis, data collation. They'll actually get to do analysis and provide you value. Whereas at the moment, they're not really providing value. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for all your time. Don't forget, you can win a sculpt mouse.